Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
/12:18, Trent Williams wants a new deal or a trade. We've been here before, haven't we? It's 2020 or it's 2019. Where are we? We'll get into that coming up in just a few. Also, Mel Kiper saying the Redskins should use the number two pick on Tua Tagovailoa. But let's get your Beltway Blitz going. We've got the Wizards on deck, the Capitals in the hole. We'll start you off on the gridiron. Chris Russell on those Redskins who are at the combine. Slashy, what'd you make of Kiper saying if the medical team in Washington thinks Tua is healthy, he should be the pick? They shouldn't even think about Young or a trade back.
Well, it's absurd, completely, 1,000%. And I was tipped off to this by seeing your tweet yesterday, Grant. So I wrote about it a little bit. And when I was thinking about it, I said, okay, on the surface, yeah, most teams are going to take a quarterback over a defensive player anyway. This isn't an average quarterback. Tua Tagovailoa has six injuries at Alabama. Six. Not one, six. And they're all making it seem like, oh, as long as he gets cleared, he'll be fine. He'll be ready to go. What about six college injuries at the quarterback position tells you that you should spend the number two overall pick on Tua Tagovailoa? I'm sorry, I can't do it. Not at that position, not in the NFL, not where they hit harder and play faster. I can't do it where you need durability at that position. It's a ridiculous claim, not to mention a month ago he was singing a different tune about Chase Young.
Well, but that was, I think, because Tua hadn't gotten a clean bill of health yet. At the time he said...
Right. But I saw you say that, and that's fine. You're right. But, Grant, again, the track record, right? You're a back-of-the-baseball-card type guy. What does the back-of-the-baseball-card tell you on Tua Tagovailoa? It tells you two bad ankle injuries, a hip injury, a broken finger, a sprained knee, and a twisted ankle. Or I think I did that one already. I counted six injuries through his injury timeline. That's all I need to know.
Russell, I'm over several things. Grown men using crying emojis with descriptions of laughter. I don't believe you're actually crying laughing. I'm over the application TikTok. I'm also over this Trent Williams thing. I want it to go away. You shouldn't make deals out of emotion, but I'm emotional about it. I just want him gone. I want this, whatever this is, to end. Where do we stand? What's going to happen? And why isn't it over?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they were trying to give it as much time as they could to try and convince him, you know, to come back and see where it goes without having to commit a lot of money to him. Maybe you could have gotten away with, hey, Trent, you know, you're due to make $12.5 million this year. We'll bump up the guarantee instead of week one. We'll do it, you know, March 15th, April 1st, whatever. Even that was a risk. But to me, at 31 going on 32, when he hasn't played in a year and a half, by the time we strap it up for good, I don't know how you commit the kind of guaranteed money Trent's looking for. And we all know they should have traded him last year when they could have possibly gotten a first-round pick. I don't see any more than a second-round pick, and that might be dicey. If you're Cleveland, even though you have Callahan and you have a druggie as your left tackle who's not coming back, how do you pay more than a second-round pick for Trent Williams? I think some of the reports that emerged last week from Tony Pauline from the Washington Post about the Redskins believing this and the Redskins believing that were as much to try and invigorate his trade value as much as anything, because they have no trade value and they need, in my opinion, to get at least a second round pick to close this thing out.
Chris, XFL for a moment. Defenders this weekend, they had a bad loss by 30 points when we thought they might be the cream of the crop. They're 2-1. Cardale Jones crashed back down to earth with 4 picks. Should we be concerned, you think, after Cardale Jones' ugly performance?
Well, I mean, yes. I think anytime you have a performance as bad as they had all around and a start as bad as they, sure, you should be concerned. The one thing that you hope is that a bad performance like that, you know, a team can respond to adversity and it puts the screws on them in practice, and that they come out with a better start. I'll be very curious to see their start this weekend, to see how they kind of get into the flow, because, Grant, I think you would agree from calling that game, and for me, from listening and watching it, they just weren't in that game from the start. Nothing went right. They're going to have to get, you know, points early, or at least a couple of defensive stops or no turnovers early to win this and go to 3-1.
Russell, thank you, buddy. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, fellas.
Let's talk some puck, please, Tommy. Capitals went on the road to Winnipeg last night. I've been to Winnipeg. Grant, it's one of the worst cities I've ever been to, and I mean that from the heart. The Capitals, I didn't think were that terrible last night for most of the game, but they didn't get any goals, hit the pipe a bunch of times, ended up with a 3-0 defeat.
Yes, they did. Couple of bullet points here for you on the Caps from last night. They needed a better performance from Ilya Samsonov. Hadn't been terrible lately. The numbers had been, and there hadn't been a lot of help for him. But he was not as sharp as he was early in the season. Had given up 12 goals in his last 3 games. In his last 2, he'd given up 8, and he was really good. He made 29 saves, 31 attempts. Had one soft goal, I thought, early. May have gotten screened a little bit, but it was from distance. Was not deflected from the point. Normally, you make that stop. Outside of that moment, he was brilliant last night. He got beat by Connor Hellebuyck, who might be a Vezina finalist this year. He made all 34 of the saves on pucks that came his way. They could not solve him. The one time they got close, Jake Virana hit a post. Let's bring on J.J. Regan of NBC Sports Washington to get some thoughts. Where did you think things went wrong for the Capitals last night after a win over Winnipeg and a shutout loss in their barn in a home-and-home?
Well, Connor Hellebuyck was the biggest factor. He was great last night, but they didn't do enough to get enough traffic in front of him. They didn't make life hard for him. Once it became clear that he was on his game, they couldn't turn the skill off. They kept going for the skill goals instead of the dirty goals. And that goes to a larger issue. They weren't physical enough last night. In their last 2 wins, they were dominant physically. They didn't bring that last night, and that is the biggest reason why they lost.
Is something I tend to agree with you. It looked like Winnipeg just had a lot of speed, a lot of momentum getting through, and they weren't getting challenged. Is it as simple as, you know, not getting pucks deep? Is it as simple as, you know, not creating enough interference? Give me kind of your prognosis of what you saw.
It's inconsistencies. The problem is when you play a physical, hard-nosed style of play like the Capitals like to play, you can't do that for 82 games. It's hard to do that. You know, your body begins to ache a little bit. And in February, it's a lot harder to say, yeah, I'm going to lay this hit and I'm going to get in front of this shot and I'm going to play physically. It's a lot harder to do that in February than it is in October or in April. The problem is that every physical team goes through this. Every physical team takes a step back in mid part of the season. The problem is they've been dealing with this since December. It's been a long time now. And so the question is this team as good as we thought? Because if they can't get to a more consistent form of play now that the trade deadline is gone, then they've got serious issues.
JJ, the Capitals, 4 points up on the Penguins with 2 games in hand, 5 points up on the Flyers with 1 game in hand. And all of a sudden, you look, there are some other hot teams in this division like the Rangers. Who should we be concerned about in the Metro?
Well, the Penguins are definitely the team to beat after the Jason Zucker trade. I like that trade a lot. Maybe they tinkered a little bit too much with the deadline, adding 4 players in the course of a month. That's a lot, even for a team that's dealt with as many injuries as they have. So I put them as the team to beat. Philadelphia would be a close second. I don't trust Philadelphia as a playoff team, but they seem to match up really well against the Caps and play them tough every time. Everyone else, I think, is distant to them. You know, we saw last year that you can't take – everyone is difficult. There are no easy outs, but I think the teams to worry about the most for the Caps would be Pittsburgh and Philly.
JJ, thank you very much, buddy. Appreciate it. Enjoy your weekend.
Anytime, guys.
Let's talk some Wizards, Tommy. We bring on my neighbor, handsome all-around gentleman. Love to run into you last night, my friend. Mr. Chase Hughes joins us here on the Blitz, talking some Wiz, NBC Sports Washington. They're in Utah this evening. They always have trouble with Utah. Rudy Gobert changes about a million shots. Give me what you're looking for here, Chase, over these last 25 games or so from this Wizards club.
Yeah, first of all, sorry there was such a hand sanitizer shortage. At CVS.
Can't get any.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as the Wizards, the last 25 games, I think expectations have been lowered a little bit in terms of the playoffs, even though they're right in the hunt if you look at the standings. But losing three or four coming out of the All-Star break, I think, has kind of had them crash back down to earth. So I'm looking at the way that the young players closed this season. Rui Hachimura, Mo Wagner, Isaac Bonga, some of these guys who have never played this many minutes before, and in Rui's case, who was playing in college last year, has never played this many games before, just coming from the college ranks where there's less than half the games in the NBA. So I want to see how those guys can close the season, because we've seen them continually improve over the course of the year, but lots of times with young players, you see them hit a wall by this time of the year. And the other thing I would say is that Bradley Beal, he didn't make the All-Star team, but he's continued to get better and better, and I think there is at least a small chance that he could be in the All-NBA conversation.
Jerome Robinson, Shabazz Napier, how are they fitting in so far? Both have had some big moments.
Yeah, they're playing in rotation minutes, and it's been a little bit up and down as they obviously figure out the playbook and what their role is. But Shabazz Napier, I think he's been an upgrade over Isaiah Thomas because he's at least serviceable on the defensive end, and he's actually a pretty decent offensive player. That, of course, was the billing for him coming out of Connecticut. Hasn't, you know, really turned into the consistent scorer that a lot of people thought he would become, but you know, sometimes he'll get hot and he'll have 10 points in the first half and sort of change the tone of a game. Jerome Robinson hasn't had as much success other than the game-winning shot he had in the last game, but I really like him.
He's a
very athletic player. He's a very hard-nosed defensive player, and I think the ceiling is really high there. You can see why he was picked 13 overall just 2 years ago.
And I like that. I like giving minutes to these guys and letting it fluctuate. What's Troy Brown prognosis kind of the rest of the season for him? What do you want to see out of him in those last 25 games?
Well, he's in kind of that weird spot. There's always one guy, it seems, every year under head coach Scott Brooks where it seems like he's improving, but he can't fully gain the trust of the coaching staff. You know, last game, Troy Brown didn't check in until midway through the second quarter. He only played 13 minutes in the game, yet he's really been improving this year, I think, over last year. And I think Scott Brooks really wants to see him play a little bit tougher on defense. Even though a lot of the numbers are going up, he still makes some young player mistakes that Scott Brooks has been really hard on him. I think he wants him he's kind of practicing some tough love on Troy Brown Jr. So I think it's been a bit of a frustrating year for Troy Brown, who probably thinks that he deserves more minutes than he's getting. But I like the signs that I'm seeing from him in terms of progress.
Chase Hughes, NBCSportsWashington.com. Thank you, buddy.
See you, pal.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
There you go. Your Blitz, three teams, one segment. A lot of intel for you. We're Grant and Danny. Mel Kiper says the Redskins have to take Tua at two. Trent Williams is right back where he started, saying he wants a new contract or to be traded. How did we get here? Plus, a pretty cool guest spot. We'll tell you about it at 12:45. And you got a chance to win a pair of tickets to see Jim Jeffries, MGM National Harbor, coming up at the end of the hour. At 12:45, David Elfin's going to join us today. Covered the Redskins in town for a long time, has written about sports in the D.C. market for decades. But the story that we're having him on to discuss in the book that he helped finish, this is really incredible. So you'll remember that on June 28th, 2018, tragically in Annapolis at the Capital Gazette, five writers and journalists were gunned down and killed by someone who stormed into the office unhappy and opened fire. Right. One of those writers was a sports reporter named John McNamara. And the 56-year-old had been covering sports in the Washington region his entire adult life. He was working on a book that he obviously was not able to finish, which his widow and David Elfin have since finished and has been published. And
very
is now
cool.
Out as a labor of love for him, and that bonded them all together. So the book itself is on the history of prep basketball in the D.C. area and this region, which is up our alley anyway and is incredible to talk about. So we'll get that at 12:45 to you today via David Elfin right here on Grant and Danny. At the end of that segment, you got a chance to win a couple of tickets to see Jim Jeffries at MGM National Harbor. So before we get into Trent Williams, we can kind of push that for a moment. Yesterday, you had the Mel Kiper comments on First Take that Tua should absolutely be the Redskins' pick at number two. These comments came down while we were on the air yesterday. We got to react to them in our final hour, took a few calls before we got off the show. But this was Kiper, who has been a huge Chase Young guy, loves Chase Young. And you can hear he's not even really an anti-Haskins guy at all. He thinks highly of Haskins as well. But he has Tua graded as so generational that he says he's a can't-miss player if the Redskins' medical staff clears him.
Well, you can have all the Chase Youngs you want, Max. If you don't have the quarterback, you're spinning your wheels. This is a quarterback league all the way. What's the difference in the Super Bowl? Mahomes and Garoppolo late in that game. Fourth quarter, Garoppolo didn't get it done because he's a good quarterback. He's not great. Patrick Mahomes is great. Didn't have a good game, but he had a really good finish, and that's all that matters. So I think you look at Tua, if the medical staff clears him, and this is the leap of faith you have to take. The medical staff is going to be key to this, more so than the scouts and the evaluators. Mm-hmm. They're the key. If they sign off, you take Tua, too. There's no doubt about that. You take Tua. You don't trade the pick. You don't take Chase Young. You take Tua. And, hey, if Haskins turns out to be better, then great. Then we can trade Tua. Okay? There's nothing wrong with it. We're not saying we're dumping Haskins. We're forgetting about Dwayne Haskins. We're giving up on Haskins. Let him battle it out and see who the best man is. Haskins
on,
already
Chase
has
Young,
a head start. He's got a year in the league. So let's see what happens.
Chase
fall
Young
to daddy, Chase Young. Fall to New York.
So forget the yelling from Max Kellerman at the end.
I wish I could.
In fact, we could just cut it and we'd never hear it again. It would be great. But the point is, Mel Kiper says at number two, Tua. Two stands for Tua here. You got to take that guy. Albert Breer was just on, who's at the Combine, who covers the NFL, who's plugged in with the Redskins, who knows how much Haskins improved last season having covered the league. And here's what he said about Kiper's declaration that if Tua is healthy, he's got to be the pick.
You know, you have to give Haskins some time here, and they'll get some time with him, and they'll get a better feel for him. You know, obviously, you know, Kyle Smith has a feel for him, but, you know, guys like, you know, Ron Rivera and Scott Turner will have a better feel for him. And, you know, I think a big part of the equation with Dwayne is going to be growing up a little bit. And if they feel like he's done that, you know, then it would make sense to work with him. If they feel like there's a generational talent at that position, you know, you don't pass up on them. That's what happened last year with the Cardinals and Kyler. They felt like he was a generational talent. They saw some things other people didn't. They decided they couldn't pass up on him. So if that's the way you see Tua and you think he's going to be able to stay healthy, that's one thing. But I also just, you know, the way I look at this, I mean, there's absolutely going to be a generational talent and another position available there in Chase Young. And I think I've made this analogy for you guys, but, you know, you saw what Nick Bosa did in San Francisco last year. He entered a defensive line room that had a ton of former first-round picks in it, you know, in Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner and Solomon Thomas and Dee Ford. And he basically, you know, turned that into the most dominant, you know, group in the league. And if you look at the Redskins, they're loaded with first-round picks on the defensive line. You know, Ryan Kerrigan, we'll see if he's back or not, but if he is, he's won. Montez Sweat, Daron Payne, and Jonathan Allen. You insert Chase Young into that group, maybe the whole group looks different. And so I think that's something to consider too.
Albert Breer earlier today right here on Grant and Danny. What I take out of that is his comment, if they feel like Tua is a generational talent, you don't pass up on him. And we use that term now, generational.
New thing. New way to say great.
Exactly. Great, but not even just great. This is a kind of once-in-an-era type player. I won't even say that, but of the ilk of the best of his era. If he's got a chance to be a Mount Rushmore quarterback in the league of his era over the next several years, you can't pass up on him. We said that about Luck. You know, he was a generational talent. If you're talking about that generation, Russell Wilson has become a generational talent. Maybe Deshaun Watson becomes that generational player. We'll see. I think Lamar Jackson in one season, it's too early to tell. After they got bounced in their first, you know, playoff game, the year after they got bounced in their first playoff game. But he's got a chance to be that after his MVP season with the way that he's changed the league already. My question is this. Is it that simple that if you deem a guy to be, this guy will be a great quarterback, 12-year career, 6 or 7 Pro Bowls, has a chance to win a championship. Is it that simple that you have to take him? Or does the context of you just took a quarterback in the first round, that you have the second overall pick and Chase Young is there, that you could move down from the second overall pick and get a selection of a crop of picks that make Haskins better, where you maybe you don't feel as good about him, but him plus a bunch of things around him might equal Tua with less around him? That's my question. And 800-636-1067, I want to hear from you guys. Do you subscribe to the theory? Because for the record, I do not. I told you there's no such thing as hard and fast rules for me in the draft. Do you subscribe to the idea that there's a hard and fast rule that teams should take the quarterback in the top two if they deem the guy the can't-miss generational player, regardless of everything else?
It's a pretty good rule. And well, the way I approach it is I've got rules and then I'll make exceptions as warranted. My exceptions are usually pretty rare. You, I think, treat it as, if I'm making exceptions, then why even have a rule? I'll just evaluate each case individually.
That's a good way to
think
word
it's,
it.
I think it's just a different way of looking at the same sheet of paper. So to me, I've got a pretty hard and fast rule that I'm not drafting a running back in the top 5, top 6, whatever it is, unless I've got a unique circumstance where I'm one player away or something like that. But back to this discussion in the beginning.
So you basically just have, at that point, preferences or normal ways of going about your business.
Yeah, my general rule is X, and I'll make an exception if need be. My general rule is all the rules that I've got about the draft when it comes to always adding more picks and your best chance for success and everything else, that goes out the window when you're talking QB. That's number one. Number two, the only way that you shouldn't be drafting the future superstar quarterback is if you're pretty damn sure you've already got one. So in other words, Green Bay 5 years ago, let's say they got a weird season, Rodgers, slips on a banana peel, doesn't start, they go 2-14, Green Bay's got the number one overall pick. Green Bay should not be taking a quarterback. They have the superstar Hall of Famer Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
He'll be back and fine. So then you start sliding the scale down. Seattle probably shouldn't if they have a top 5 pick. New England for years with Brady shouldn't. You get down to this level with the Redskins, you got a guy with a really tiny sample size of being good. If you believe it, Tua is that legit, I don't care about hurt feelings. I don't care about fairness.
If you have you one of those it. Quarterbacks, you're almost never going to be in position to take the next generational guy.
Right. You got to be the Colts where Manning gets hurt, right?
Exactly. Or you've got to just guess right later in the draft. Like the generational guy like Wilson could go in the third round. But you're not picking in the top two or three where those guys are normally either advocated for or selected.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I'm wondering is, I get the sense, and Redskins fans, you guys have to help me out and give me an idea of how you're feeling, but this is just my take on what I have seen and heard so far. I think there are a lot of people who say, you could sit down with them and we could do a Ghost of Christmas Future move, where we look at 10 years from now, and Tua is the dude. Let's say Tua is left-handed Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Not to say that you've won Super Bowls, but Tua is mobile and athletic, and you get him out of the pocket.
Superstar.
And extends plays, and he's a great football player. I think a lot of Redskins fans say he'll be a great football player for someone else. I've got Dwayne Haskins. I like Dwayne Haskins, and you just drafted this guy, so you can't draft someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that part is crazy. Like, in other words, I know that this is not an exact science, but I'm playing a hypothetical here where if I do the Scrooge bit and I show you that 10 or 12 years from now, Tua is the dude, I feel like not all Redskins fans would say, yeah, you absolutely draft him at 2. Because their point would be, nah, because I think Chase Young could still be great, and then you still have Haskins, and or maybe you could trade back and get a bunch of picks. You see what I'm saying?
Of course I do, yeah.
Like, let me ask you directly.
Mm-hmm.
We look into the future, and you see that 12 years from now, Tua's made 4 Pro Bowls or 5 Pro Bowls, and he's Wilson-ish. Like, he's a top 5, top 6, top 7 quarterback in the league.
Then you take that guy without hesitation.
And that's kind of my thought.
You take that guy without hesitation.
I don't think all Redskins fans think that way right now. I think their point is that there's some obligation to see this Haskins thing through. And I'm saying, if you don't want to take Tua, no problem. Like, I don't think I would take Tua at 2, for the record. I want to see how this draft process plays out in his health. But I am really concerned, not to the extent that Russell is, but I am really concerned about his durability.
Because no matter what you're doing, you're making a bet. You're either betting on Haskins or you're betting on Tua. And that's what draft picks are. Howie Roseman turned me on to that concept. Every decision you make is a bet on something happening.
Do you agree with the idea that Breer said on our show today that if the Redskins do think Tua is generational, they have to take him? Because you can't, when you aren't sold that you have a generational quarterback, pass up on the chance to add one this high in the draft. Do you agree with that or not? Yes or no? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Dan. Yesterday, Mel Kiper said the Redskins had to draft Tua at number two. We asked Albert Breer about that today, and he said if they feel like he's a generational talent, you don't pass up on him. But then he provided the caveat that there's another generational talent. It's at the pass rusher position in Chase Young. The question for you guys is this, 800-636-1067. Do you agree with the statement and the theory that if there is a quarterback who is generational and special, that you break glass in case of that emergency? That basically, no matter what, if you don't have a quarterback, you draft that guy at number two. That's the question. Now, in your call, you're nice enough to call us. You can kind of steer where you'd want to. I know a lot of you want to talk about whether you win championships with defense or quarterbacks or what you think of Tua or his injury history. That's all fine. But I want an answer to this question. Do you agree with the working thesis that when you aren't sure if you have a quarterback and your entire staff decides that at number two there is a generational quarterback available, you should always draft that player, yes or no?
Yes.
800-636-1067.
That's my answer, because otherwise you're part of the other group. You got to do, instead of just getting one guy right, you got to get 30 guys right. When you come to this defense, this defensive coordinator, the defensive staff, the right scheme, the right everything, you got to have injury luck. You got a great quarterback, you're in it every year. You're in it.
My answer is no to that. I wouldn't always draft that guy. But that being said, and the reason why I wouldn't always draft that guy is because even if my team is sold, it doesn't mean that it's a thing. That being said, I understand why smart people feel that way. But I'm just curious what Redskins fans think about that. And then the other part is, if I told you that 12 years from now, Tua is going to be great and he's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league,
and you passed on it,
would you pass on that for the chance of whatever Haskins could become with whatever other players you put around him because you didn't have to use that pick on Tua? That unknown. Bill's in Lorton on Grant and Danny. How are you, Bill?
Hey, Grant. How you doing, Danny?
Hey, buddy.
How y'all doing?
Come in.
Very well.
I'm like you, Grant, in a sense, whereas that Tua is injury prone. Mel Kiper Jr., yes, you need a quarterback. A quarterback is a driven league to a certain extent, but Tua is injury prone and he hasn't played a down in the NFL, so we don't really know what he'll be for real. But remember, Joe Gibbs drafted a guy named Sean Taylor, a real game changer, a guy who could just take over. Well, that's what Chase Young could be, and I wouldn't pass him up, Grant.
Appreciate you, buddy. So why does that make a lot of people feel like you?
Why doesn't that same rule apply for Chase Young? You know what I mean? Where we go, not the injury prone part, but he goes, he hadn't put it down in the NFL. We don't know anything. But Chase Young's a game wrecker. We hope.
No,
we don't know.
You'd have to use the same logic on both guys. The one part I think that differentiates the two for him maybe is the injury history.
The injuries, of course.
And the concern. Understood. Teams are going to have that concern. You might get some teams that say, I don't love what I'm seeing in this medical. I don't know if I could take this guy that high.
Or the risk is not worth it, or the risk is worth it, depending.
But yeah, I'm with you. You cannot speak out of one side of your mouth and say, he's never done it in the NFL. He's a complete unknown. But Chase Young, you know he's going to be great. How do you know that? There haven't been unbelievable college pass rushers that everyone said couldn't miss who did? Of course there have been. Daryl's in Alexandria. Hey, Daryl.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
I'm no on the factor, and kind of like the other guy, I would say Chase Young because of just think what he would do to the defense, guys. I mean, it would change everything. If we pick another quarterback, and the only way I would pick a quarterback is if Cincinnati picked Chase Young. Then I would think about Burrow. I wouldn't think about Tua.
We're getting into now who would you take at number two, Tua or Chase Young. It's not what I'm asking. Daryl, what I want to know is, and I appreciate your thoughts on that, what I'm trying to ask is, if Kyle Smith and Ron Rivera and all the people that matter decide when they evaluate Tua, what is Tua? And they say, this is going to be one of the top five quarterbacks over the next 10 years that comes out. Is that enough to feel like you should draft that guy regardless of everything else?
No, I wouldn't draft him. And it goes back to Redskins always picking these hurt players. I don't want it. I want to go Chase Young, definitely.
All right, appreciate it.
Thank you, buddy.
I don't think we're going to be able to have the conversation I want to have. You understand what I'm trying to
yes,
figure out?
Yes, of course.
I'm trying to talk philosophy. Everyone's very specifically talking about Chase Young and Tua. And maybe it's my own fault because maybe what I'm trying to ask is either like
is, you're asking a bigger picture thing.
Right. I'm not talking about this pick or this class. What I'm trying to figure out is the paradigm of drafting quarterbacks. As a Redskins fan, we don't know if Dwayne Haskins is a franchise quarterback. If the people that make the pick are sold that Tua is that enough to draft a quarterback? That's what I'm asking. And you can take Tua's name out of it. If this is a year from now, you draft Tua, he plays in six games, he's up and down, and now at number two, Trevor Lawrence is there, and you have a possibility to draft him. My point is simple. Should you always take the quarterback you're sold on if you're not sold that you have the guy in your building? That's all I'm trying to figure out. Dan and Bristow on G&D. And maybe it's a dumb question. Maybe it's too complicated. I don't know. What's
good,
up, Dan?
Good question, Grant. How you guys doing?
Thank you.
And I say no.
Okay. Thank you for
because
your answer.
There's been many generational talents that didn't make it in the NFL.
Right. It's true. Guys that teams were sold on. And what did it mean?
I understand that point, but then why ever make a pick?
I think team first. Well, I think team. If you have a good line already to protect him, then maybe there's a chance you take him. Otherwise, you're just going to get him killed like 20 other quarterbacks happened over the years.
Which is fair. I mean, you got to build the nest.
His point is like you can build the nest first and worry about the quarterback after, which answers the question.
Which does answer the question. I mean, I guess I talk out of both sides of my mouth on this thing because I'm a big build the nest guy. I'm always like, if a team is going to draft a quarterback, you better be sure that kid has a chance to be successful. How many guys are now punchlines that go to bad organizations, no cohesive philosophy, bad offensive lines, no weapons, coaches that get fired after a year or two, and the kid turns into a joke? We laugh at Tim Couch and Akili Smith and Joey Harrington and name all those guys. They were all pretty highly touted coming out. They all had all the wonderful check marks and all the different things at the combine. All their throwing drills looked excellent. And somehow none of them worked out going to crappy teams, but Ben Roethlisberger works out.
The two sides of it are, to me, if you have so many other holes, do those matter as much or more? Or are you of the camp that nothing matters if you don't have the quarterback? Because that's obviously what Kuiper's saying.
Mm-hmm.
Kuiper said you can have as many Chase Youngs as you want. If you don't have a passer who's a championship-level player, you're spinning your tires. And there's a lot of people that feel that way. If you don't have a great quarterback, then the rest of the picks that you make are borderline irrelevant. And I see Garoppolo, who's not great, almost win a Super Bowl. And I see Tannehill, who's not great, get to an AFC championship game. And I say that you don't necessarily need Pat Mahomes to do it. But, man, it gets a hell of a lot easier when you have Pat Mahomes. Let's go to Daryl in Annandale. Hey, Daryl.
You know, man, you kind of just repeated exactly what I was going to say because I'm 58 years old, and I've seen so many quarterbacks that, matter of fact, are in the Hall of Fame that never got into the Super Bowl. Never got to the Super Bowl, man, but put up a lot of numbers. You know what I mean? Put in for a lot of touchdowns. But the great defenses, people can holler them off, man, all these great defenses. And I'm telling you, man, when I look at this kid, Chase, and I think about Sweat, and I think about them Alabama boys, and just think, this is a team that Tim Settles can't even get in the starting lineup. Matt Ioannidis will not be in the starting lineup. So when I look at this defense, and you got Collins up on the line, man, I love what I'm seeing.
Appreciate you, dude.
Which I get. I mean, their defensive line has a chance to be excellent. You add Chase Young to it, and that's what Breer was talking about. It looks like the San Francisco situation of all those ones being reinvigorated with a guy who's really, really good. Let's move Dave Elfin to 1 o'clock. We'll chat with him about his book at that time. We're giving away tickets at the end of next segment to see Jim Jeffries, but a lot of people want to chime in on this. 800-636-1067. Do the Redskins have to take Tua if they think he's the next great quarterback in the league, not knowing what Haskins is? Or can they think that and still take Chase Young because he's special?
Like, basically, would you be okay if they took a quarterback at two if they believe in him? Forget about Tua, right? Is it as simple as that? Like, let's say they tell you that Justin Herbert's the generational talent.
Yeah.
Whoever it is, this regime, these guys, they're going to take a QB because they believe in him so strongly.
Yeah, we think this
is the
dude.
Are you cool with that?
Grant and Danny on the Fan. That does hurt my brain.
I'm trying to figure it out. I'm going, no, but it's a mirror. And if you reverse the image... Wait a minute, and I tried to do it myself. Oh, my head hurts.
This is dumb, and it doesn't matter, but Trevor Bauer, there's a video of him I just saw online, and he's holding a microphone, and he's wearing a wedding ring with what appears to be his right pinky finger. his ring finger on his right hand, I should say. And I'm thinking, well, that looks like it's got to be his right hand. Why would he wear his wedding band on his right hand?
Because I'm trying to do it now. I'm trying to recreate it, and it definitely, you could tell that it's my left hand.
Yeah, so I'm saying based on looking at the picture, just putting yourself in his position, you can tell that's his right hand. But Danny's saying there's like this mirror effect. My brain is hurting. I don't know. I can't figure it out. But luckily, it doesn't matter at all.
I lost consciousness for a second.
The good thing is we don't need to know. It's going to be okay to move
forward. He's so weird, by the way. I guarantee you he does stuff like that. Where's his ring on his right ring finger toe?
That's honestly how this all got going in my head was I was wondering, is he just doing a wacky bit where he's doing a different thing?
It's just so weird.
Where he's going to put the wedding ring on his right ring finger. It's possible. But we'll talk to David Elfin coming up at the top of the hour at 1 o'clock. Capital of basketball on the history of basketball at the prep level in the nation's capital. Really neat deal as he finished a book for the late John McNamara. So I want to talk to him about that on Grant and Danny today. That's coming up in about 10 minutes. Remember, at the end of this segment, we've got tickets to see Jim Jefferies, comedian at MGM National Harbor. Mel Kiper says you got to take Tua at 2 if you love him, if you think he's the real deal. You just can't pass on a quarterback that you are in love with when you're picking that high in the draft. Do you believe that thinking? Or does the context of taking Haskins last year, Chase Young being available, trade down possibilities matter? Let's go to TJ and Calvin. I don't know what that's about, but I'm throwing him on hold. Sounds like my guy's in a club now.
He's doing a Lonely Island video right there.
What was that? Chase in Kensington, you're on the Fan. What's up, Chase?
Hey, guys. Great stuff as usual.
Thank you, buddy.
I think both of you brought up great points. To add to it, I think in this case, as a Redskins fan, I think if you guys have brought it up in the past that if Dwayne Haskins isn't a top 16 quarterback, then it's a must, right? And then looking at it around the league, you know, looking at this twofold, if you're around the league, you go to Bill Belichick, who pretty much drafts a quarterback all the time. And if you're in need of any quarterbacking or want to draft and trade and all that kind of stuff, then you have to take the top generational talent unquestioned in my book.
Thanks, Chase. I mean, Belichick does it in the fourth round. You know what I mean? Belichick's always taking these guys like Jarrett Stidham from Auburn, who he likes a little bit more than the field, but he's taking them in the mid rounds. A little different than going at number 2 and passing on the best defensive player in the class. Maybe it's as simple as saying what this staff thinks of Haskins is all that matters.
That's a huge part. I was just going to say that. But think about this also. The Colts are not picking number 2 very often when Peyton Manning's there. They picked it, or number 1 rather. They picked number 1 once and they took the quarterback. Right? Because they go, when are we going to be here again? When Peyton comes back and he's not himself, he's still going to lead us to 9 wins.
But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Manning was already out or on his way out when that happened.
Well, because they decided.
Medically not going to be able to play.
Well,
no, that was
miss
his neck, remember?
Yeah, he was going to miss the year. He misses the year. He was going to come back the following year. And they said, we're going to move on because we got the number 1 pick. We got this Andrew Luck guy. Because he's that generational, all the words that people are using.
Christo, Frederick, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Well,
wonderful. Thank you.
Hey, in Grant's initial question, he uses the word always. You cannot answer a question that says always or never because then you'll be stuck. You need to work with what you got. You have a coach. Have the coach get the best out of his players, whether it's the quarterback or not. You cannot keep changing and chasing talent that may or may not be there. Do your job as a coach and make him the best he can be and live with what you got.
So let me ask you this, Christo. I like your point, but you say you can't keep chasing. I think you can until you find the guy who's good enough. Dwayne Haskins last year did nothing to prove that he is definitively good enough. Now, the last game and a half was good, but you might also be just banging your head against the wall. In other words, if you take I'll just pick a random guy, but like let's say Joey Harrington was drafted in the top 5.
Mm-hmm.
There was someone at some point that was completely sold on him. Well, just coach him up. Just make him better. He was great at Oregon. You might have the wrong guy. I mean, what if this staff says, we're not sold, we don't know that he's the guy? Because the last staff did. It didn't happen to matter, but that's what they thought.
Gotcha. Okay.
Well, that's why I'm asking. I'm not saying. Well, what's your take to that?
I really can't answer that because I don't know. I just, this team has been chasing people in all different positions trying to fill them.
You chase until you find.
Yeah, they've been chasing because they haven't had one.
Right.
If you have one, you don't let him go. Or actually, maybe you do let him go to Minnesota.
Again,
but the point is, you try to find one.
Do you think if Haskins had Daniel Jones' rookie season last year, that we would be considering the Redskins taking a quarterback at two?
No.
Absolutely not. Because Daniel Jones, I'm sorry to everyone who thought he sucked before the draft and was completely irresponsibly rude to that kid, was pretty good. Now, he made a lot of mistakes, and you know what he did? He had a lot of rookie turnovers. Hopefully, he cleans those up. But he also threw for 3,000 yards and 23 touchdowns and had some gem performances. He played at a level that makes you think he could be a franchise quarterback in the NFL.
Plenty of upside there.
That's what he did. So now, the Giants in the top five will not be drafting a quarterback. The point is, maybe the Redskins aren't there yet on Haskins. He had six quarters of good football in his rookie season. Six. Al in Hyattsville, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How y'all doing?
Hey, buddy.
Good.
Good. Yo, here's my thing, and I think Grant, Tommy, Danny, both of you have hit great, great points. Here's my thing. How do you build a house? You start with the foundation, right? So you don't add the excellent stuff on the outside until the foundation has been built. The thing here that I see when I look at this situation is that we still need to get foundational here. We need offensive and defensive line to make it, you know, really stick and work. Doesn't matter who's back there from a quarterback standpoint, they're not going to work well if the foundation isn't built. So guys like Trent, you know, or similar to Trent, that can come in and protect and block for him. Because quite frankly, how many years have we seen guys that were average quarterbacks, but their offensive line made them look really good?
Right.
Because they gave him time to actually do stuff. And this is the situation I see here. I see a guy who basically was jerked around. You had a coach who didn't want him. And the idea that Tua's there, I'm not sold on Tua. Yes, he could be a, you know, the same way that they say he could be a transformational foundational quarterback. That's great. But under what scheme?
Well, it's all true. I mean, it's all, I think it's all fair. It's all relevant. It's all good points. Look, for me, I go back to like, Mitch Trubisky as an example.
Right.
All right?
I was going to bring him up, yeah.
Mitch Trubisky. You can keep banging your head against the wall because you took him in the top five and you like some things about him. It ain't going to happen.
Look at the Jaguars and Blake Bortles.
Right.
Right? I mean, listen, that's a top three pick. The only thing that is, as again, I try to have my rules, but then there's always exceptions. So what's the point of the rules? I want to build the nest first, but when's the next time I'm going to be in this draft position without having to give up the Robert Griffin trade
100%.
With this caliber of QB? And if to, you buy, if you
to,
buy.
To clarify, I'm not saying Haskins is Trubisky at all yet.
Right, we don't know yet.
All I'm saying is if we can all agree you can't just do this for 2 or 3 years. So if it'll be at the end of this year probably that we know either they have to move on from Haskins or he's got a chance to be really good. But the problem is at the end of this year, you might not be back into the top three mix to what you just said, the top four mix, to have a chance at a guy like Tua or like these other guys. And that's what you might have to go a year earlier than you want.
This is your 30 for 30 moment, right? If Tua is great in 15 years, what if I told you? And Michael, and whatever the guy's name is on ESPN's narrating it.
Capital of Basketball, new book on the prep stars that have come out of this area, was originally written by an author who was killed while he was writing the book. It was finished by one of his best friends who's a good friend of the show. We'll talk to David Elfin about it next on Grant and Danny. As promised right now, caller number 10, 800-636-1067. You're winning two tickets to see Jim Jeffrey, MGM National Harbor, March 6th. Tickets are on sale now. Details at fandc.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.